Hello and welcome. This is Marketing in the Raw. That is the podcast, and my name is Adam Helway. I am the host. This is the podcast where I try to expand how you define the practice of marketing and your vision of where it's headed, especially in a digitally connected world. I am so happy that you could join me. So happy. Hey, speaking of a digitally connected world, Alexa, play the latest episode of Marketing in the Raw on Apple Podcasts.
Getting Marketing in the Raw with Adam Helway from Apple Podcasts. Playing the latest episode, The Art of Authentic Communication, Feet. Kate Bradley Sherry.
Hey, Alexa, stop. Did I get your device to perk up? Hey, all jokes aside, maybe you're like me and you have a smart speaker within earshot of you almost anywhere in the house. Pulling up your daily news briefing, your favorite hip-hop playlist, or possibly even your favorite podcast. Wink, wink. It's never been easier. 6 years ago, nobody knew what the heck a smart speaker was or why they'd even want one. Now, 27% of the U.S. population own a smart speaker. Half of those have more than one in their house. While a lot of those people, me included, use their smart speakers as a way to get quick information like the weather and control their smart homes. Yes, I know, I'm a geek. The adoption of smart speakers and voice-enabled assistants is just one of the elements driving digital audio consumption. That's where my guest comes in. His name's Tom Webster, and he is the Senior Vice President of Strategy and Marketing at Edison Research, and one of the top experts in the world on digital media, especially audio. He is the co-author of The Infinite Dial, the survey of record in the digital audio space for the last 21 years. As both a marketer and a podcaster, I've been super excited to talk to Tom for quite some time. I've been hunting him down and finally got him to spend some time with us and share a few things. We got to dive into some of the drivers of audio content consumption and why marketers should even be caring to pay attention. He also shares his favorite marketing campaign that leveraged audio. Spoiler alert, it involves coffee. And he gives us a warning about the importance of not treating audio as a second-class citizen if you're willing to commit and add it to your content marketing strategy. All right, well now if you're willing to give a listen, please enjoy this conversation with Tom Webster. Tom Webster, I finally have you. I've been wanting to talk to you for some time, and I'm so glad that you are joining me, sir. How are you doing in your neck of the woods?
I'm an elusive booker, I guess. I've slipped through your fingers many times. I'm pretty good. I'm in Boston. My wife and I live in right in downtown Boston, right on the Boston Common, essentially. And like you, we're home.
Yeah. Who would have thought you home? I mean, and maybe somebody who's listening to this happens to be home as well. Well, I'm glad that I was able to track down the elusive Tom Webster. And you are well known for being somebody who talks about content or really media consumption, but you really go deep on the audio side. And it feels a lot like when you think of all of the different like mediums, content mediums, you've got, you know, the written word and video and images and so on, and all these other, just when you think of a format, a wide format, audio seems to get the short end of the stick, it feels a little bit from a business and a marketing side. And we'll dive into that a little bit, but I wondered, like, specifically for you, you've been in this space talking about media consumption and audio for 15 years or more than 15 years. What is it about that focus that keeps you interested in that space?
You know, I'm really just a nut for all things audio and always have been. I'm a music nut. I've worked in really on the audio side of media for 25 years now, and in research and consulting. But I grew up listening to great interviewers on the radio. I remember listening to Larry King when he had his overnight radio talk show. This is well before he was on TV on CNN, and it was just I wouldn't go to sleep. I would just stay up and listen to it all night. And so ever since I was a kid, I've just been a nut for spoken word audio, music, and everything. And it's just worked out that I'm fortunate to have the career that I have.
Are you a musician by any chance?
If you're looking for some horrible guitar, then I can do that. You know, if you need me to audition and you're looking for someone that, you know, not that good, maybe a little worse, I'm the guy you call.
You can hum an awesome tune probably, right?
Yeah, not bad. I'm good at that.
Well, over at Edison Research, where you've been contributing for a long, long time, you played a big role in publishing the long-running survey that you guys call the Infinite Dial, which I love the name of that. Why? Tell us a little bit more about that survey and what sort of role that it's been playing in the industry's understanding of audio media consumption.
You know, we started the Infinite Dial back in 1998, and it had a slightly different name then because the dial was not quite so infinite in 1998. It was the finite but greatly expanded dial maybe in 1998. But it was actually started. I didn't join Edison until 2004, so this is 6 years before I got there. But it was started really as a service to the radio industry, which were a lot of Edison's clients at the time, to examine this new thing called the internet and whether or not radio had anything to worry from it, whether radio might have something to gain from it. And so it was really the first look at what internet radio looked like back then, which was a whole host of things that don't exist anymore, like AOL Net Radio, Spinner. I believe Live 365 is still around, but that was certainly one of them. And now, of course, the landscape is completely different. But this survey is essentially it is the longest running longitudinal study of American consumer habits in terms of media and technology, and it's been going continuously since 1998. I became the voice and the main presenter of it back in 2004. And that's allowed me to have this really long longitudinal look at where we've come from, how fast things do or do not grow, and the new habits, that consumers pick up as technology enables new media and new behaviors.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because, like you said, because the survey's been around for so long, you guys have been doing it for so long, you have a lot of data to compare to from previous years. So when you look at the report, you get to really compare what the trend's been like for, you guys, I think, in the report show, you have been showing almost the entire breadth of that, from what I recall, where you're 10, 15 years worth of data and how it's been trending one direction or the other, correct?
Yeah, some of those graphs, internet radio, we show typically today, we show back to 2000, we show podcasting back to 2005. And it's just kind of a cool flex, I think, to be honest, to say, look how much data we have. But yeah, some of these things, and that's kind of the thing with a tracking study like that is to do it to the highest possible standards in terms of methodology, and try to change as little as possible. Once you start changing things, then it kind of breaks trending and tracking. So, many of the things that are in there have been in there for 20 years. Podcasting's been in there for 15 years, and some other behaviors, like social media and things like that. We started tracking back in 2007, 2008, I think. So it's really a big part of the value of it. And it's what has helped that study become so entrenched really as the survey of record for so many different forms of media.
Yeah, and some of the forms of media that you cover in there, for me, in my mind, I kept thinking of podcasting because it's one of those things, as you mentioned, it's been around for a long time, but it's had like a number of inflection points that have helped it gain broader adoption. It still has room to grow, but in the survey you guys cover, correct me if I'm wrong, but sort of there's the podcasting side of things, and then there is the, I guess what you'd call it, the music consumption side of things for the most part, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, we're covering streamed audio, we're covering on-demand audio like podcasting, and all of the little things in between. And that's, the Infinite Dial is the study that you see every year, Adam, but we also have other studies that are, for clients, basically, one called Share of Ear. And that's a large quarterly study that is the only single source measure of all forms of audio online and offline. It's the only product, basically, that allows us to compare AM FM radio to podcasts, to Spotify, Pandora, to satellite radio. We've been doing that since 2014. So we've developed a lot of insights on that. And then last year we started a bespoke podcast research service called the Podcast Consumer Tracker. And that's again, another large sample quarterly study of the ongoing consumption habits of and you know what they're listening to, what networks they're listening to, and so on, of podcast consumers. So, and then you know, dozens of studies kind of in between have really gifted us with a really both broad and deep knowledge of the audio space. And it's been my principal practice area at Edison really for the entire time that I've been there.
So let's talk a little bit about podcasts and a little bit of adoption over time. I mean, we often think of Apple when we think of podcasts predominantly, besides the fact that they have, you know, one of the first to have a really meaningful directory of podcasts out there that has been the go-to place for many folks. The name pod comes from, you know, the iPod and so on. So it's coined a bit by them. So we often think of that, and even most of the folks that I speak to when it comes to the ones that are podcasters tell me that Apple still remains the place where it seems that within their metrics, they're still getting the most subscribers and the most visibility and so on. But more recently, over the last couple of years, Spotify, who most folks immediately know as a streaming music place, not only have they included podcasts in their library now, but they've made a number of acquisitions both on the technology side and on the media side in order to try to bolster themselves as a place to consume podcasts. Do you have any feelings on that, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's, you know, Spotify is already, I think, a strong number two in terms of podcast clients. And I think, depending on the network and the shows in question, they might very well be number one, and they're trending in that direction, I think. For a number of reasons, I think number one, they have been very visible in their support for the medium, and they have actually, and we've shown this in Infinite Dial research, actually, they've had a lot to do with bringing younger people into podcasting. I mean, podcasting was really predominantly, I would say, a 30 to 49 medium for many, many years. And now there's huge growth 12 to 24. And a lot of that is really due to Spotify. And of course, the other thing that you really can't ignore, it sounds simple, but Spotify is cross-platform. And every time that I see in someone's network stats that Apple is by far number one, I look at it as a cry for help, right? I mean, Android is the number one platform in the globe. And you would expect to see that pop up a little bit more. And it's starting to do that. I think Google was a bit later to providing the tools for consumption and creation of podcasting, certainly, than Apple was. But Spotify has made visible investments. They are improving. And, you know, the funny thing about it is that when you listen to a podcast on Spotify, it's technically not a podcast anymore. And some people can get kind of bent out of shape about that, but I don't think that that's something I want to relitigate at this point, because the bottom line, and we see this in our share of ear research, is that the percentage of audio that we listen to that is spoken word has grown in the last 4 years, and that's grown by 20% in the last 4 years, and that takes directly from music. So that ratio of music to spoken word has changed in a reasonably short period of time. And podcasting is by far the number one reason for that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because you know, Apple, the format that Apple has had, right? Traditionally, you would download the episode and listen to it. Stuck around for quite some time, and just like you said, right? Spotify is across platforms. Doesn't matter whether it's on an iPhone or iPad or Android, excuse me, and it's. It's technically streaming, right? It removes the, and I think I've seen you speak about this actually in some of your old talks, where there was a little bit of friction getting folks to understand the process of just being able to consume podcasts, especially previously on Apple, whether it's, you know, having to connect things and download stuff and then the whole word subscribe and so on. And now all you're just doing is you're going on to Spotify and click and follow, and making sure that anytime there's new content, it's there, and they've made that process that much easier. And in the data, that's what stood out to me, actually, the data in the Infinite Dial, is that this year we seem to be seeing podcast listeners skew much younger. And that was a total surprise to me, because just like you said, it seemed to be sort of the adults, you know, game there, certainly at the 35 and up crowd. So that would make sense. What's driving that?
And I, you know, the other thing behind that, though, it's not just the friction, and it's not just Spotify kind of making it easy. It's also content, and it's investments in content that appeal to, you know, younger and older, and just simply a broader variety of Americans. I mean, when podcasting really first started in, you know, kind of the mid 2000s, you know, most podcasts were two white dudes talking about internet routers, right? And I was there. But you know, now there's just plenty of great content out there. You know, it's not all just highbrow content, which I think it certainly was kind of early on, but you know, you've got more broad concepts, you know, the varying types of true crime alone are sort of mind-boggling right now. But that's all good for the space. And, you know, what really held podcasting back as much as technological friction was the not incorrect feeling by millions of Americans that it's not something they really needed.
Mm.
Like, why do I need this? There's no, where's the compelling content? It's not worth the hassle. But you know, it's increasingly worth the hassle, and there's increasingly less hassle.
Well, and that bears, you know, noting, like, for instance, the Joe Rogan podcast, which is one of the top podcasts, period, on the internet. That's one of the moves that Spotify made, right? They, what is it, the 10-year licensing or something like that of the Joe Rogan podcast exclusively on Spotify? Just an example of what you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's a remarkable deal to me, and I can't wait to see how it turns out, because, you know, by the end of the year, all of Joe's content is going to be, you know, on Spotify and not anywhere else. He will undoubtedly see a reduction in his audience.
Yeah,
that's a given. But you know, one of the things that you get on Spotify is you are marketing to an individual account. You are streaming to an individual account that has an email address and has information and has, you know, behavioral data attached to it. And you also have a perfect record of whether or not an ad was streamed to that person, served to that person, which is something that podcasting, you know, doesn't really have perfectly right now. There's pretty good ad tech with podcasting, but with Spotify, you get that sort of additional assurance that I think a lot of brand advertisers look for. So on the one hand, I think his audience will go down, but on the other hand, the monetization opportunities may actually increase.
That's really, really interesting. I didn't really think of it from that perspective. But you have an identifiable, you have some identifiable information. And previously somebody just goes and downloads a file again, predominantly on Apple Podcasts, and you're not able to have the same opportunities to reach them or understand your audience in that way. What other technology do you think that's been one of the things you guys mentioned is, for instance, the adoption of smart speakers. I remember a little bit of an inflection point a number of years ago was just simply launching a dedicated podcast app on the iOS platform, where before it was all mushed together inside the thing called iTunes. And I think that there, from what I recall, there was a spike in podcast adoption because now there was this dedicated place where, oh, what do I do with this? With this app, and now folks could go there specifically to listen and dig into just the podcasts. Is one of the next inflection points besides maybe Spotify and some of the moves that they're making, the continued adoption of connected devices that have audio built in?
I think that's certainly one of them. And I, you know, we've been tracking smart speakers for 4 years now, actually, in partnership with NPR. We've produced a series of studies called the Smart Audio Report, one or two of these a year. And, you know, there's probably a cap on the market for a smart speaker, per se, you know, whether that's an Alexa device or a Google Assistant device or something like that. But the sky is the limit for voice assistant technology, I think, being baked in into everything. That certainly enables, you know, enables consumption. People have fun doing it. We know from our Smart Audio Report research that most forms of audio get about an hour and a quarter to an hour and 45 minutes more consumption per week, purely as a result of the smart speaker. But the next big inflection point, I think, is when that technology and broadband gets more seamlessly built into the car. You know, right now, AM, FM radio is still absolutely dominant in car. And I think, you know, for people who sort of live more on the progressive edge of things in terms of technology, probably wrote radio off a long time ago and believe that that's just because they don't, people don't have any other choice. That's not true. You know, millions of Americans choose AM, FM radio because they love AM, FM radio. That said, when it becomes frictionless to sit in your car seat and say, Alexa, play the latest episode of Joe Rogan, people are going to do that. And when that happens, then the entire order of things in the car is going to change. And that's really going to open the floodgates for digital audio of all stripes. Everything from podcasts to streaming music services to audiobooks.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to ask, I was a bit surprised, right? Right now we're in the middle of a global pandemic. Folks are not driving to work, you know, they're driving a fraction of the amount they were before. Those who are driving are on roads that are, at least in our area, far less congested. So the time on the road is less. And I would have thought that listening in the car would have by and large been the biggest place where they would be consuming podcasts specifically. And in your report, it's a minuscule fraction in comparison to like terrestrial radio or some sort of streaming music or something from their own device, right?
Yeah. And, you know, some of the things that we keep track of there, you know, where do people listen to podcasts the most? Well, you're not in your car that much compared to how much you're at home, right? So it's, you know, it's logical that home would be the number one location. You know, it's also difficult for most of us, I think, to listen to a podcast while we're working. You know, that's a lunch hour thing. It's a very lean forward medium. So that's sort of unsurprising. But, you know, again, there's still that next level of friction removal that needs to happen. You know, one of the things that we've been tracking in the Infinite Dial is the percentage of people, drivers and passengers, basically anyone who operates or sits in a car, what percentage of them say they have an integrated in-dash entertainment system that's internet driven, right? And that's still under 20%. It's grown a lot, but it's a number that grows slowly because we don't buy new cars all that often. And so, you know, right now it sits at about 19%. So, you know, anytime I see anything above that 19%, which podcasting is, you know, it's because people are adapting, right? They are finding ways to consume content, whether it's through Bluetooth or through a USB cable or God forbid, listening to headphones. We know they do it in the car. So, you know, I think once access again to digital audio becomes really baked into the car natively and becomes voice enabled so that you don't crash and die trying to get the latest episode of Up First or something, then, you know, people are going to listen to exactly what they want to listen to. And largely those are the things that they're listening to when they're at home.
It continues to illustrate the point about, you know, the experience that reducing friction and the technology that we're talking about is what helps to reduce that friction, the impact that has on the consumption of that content. And that's likely been a really strong deterrent for folks. Like you said, is it worth it? I think it's interesting how you brought it up sort of from both sides. As you improve the experience, whether that be, you know, technology or otherwise, defend the device and ease of being able to get it through something like a voice enabled app of some kind or assistant. And then the opposite direction, which is making the content worthwhile, right? So instead of having a bunch of geeks talking about a topic or something like that over coffee, you've got instead Joe Rogan, you've got some of the late shows and, you know, Trevor Noah and things like that, that are creating, you know, shows that somebody might otherwise have to go jump on the TV to watch, but are perfectly happy listening to from an audio perspective. And that just scratches the surface. We're only talking sort of about the big media companies. There's plenty of independent podcasts that are, awesome, on their own. And sort of coming at it from both directions, I think podcasting seems to have a lot of room for additional adoption based on that.
Yeah, 100%. And I, you know, we've done the last 3 years, we've been fortunate enough to do the one of the keynote addresses at Podcast Movement, which is the biggest podcast conference now. And so we've done a bespoke research study every year. And a couple of years ago, we focused on people who have heard of podcasting but don't listen to podcasts. And so we surveyed a large sample of them. We also did video interviews with people where we introduced them to podcasting for the first time. And, you know, the medium has been audience resistant in a lot of ways for years and years, and it doesn't even know the ways in which it does that. I mean, one of the not small reasons why people who have at least heard the term have not listened to podcasts is because they think they cost money. Mm. And that's, you know, that's due to really to the industry's unfortunate use of the word subscribe, which anything you subscribe to besides podcasts and a YouTube channel costs money. You subscribe to HBO, you subscribe to a magazine, you subscribe to the Fruit of the Month Club. So when I tell you that I'd like you to subscribe to my podcast, there's millions of Americans who think that means they have to pay for it. So, you know, there's all kinds of things that I think the medium has to think about to cross the next hurdle and get that sort of next 100 million listeners.
How should marketers, why should marketers be paying attention to the audio consumption trends? Why should they care what's in the survey?
Well, I mean, one thing that we know, again, from our share of ear research is that Americans listen to about 4 hours of audio per day. And there's a wide range on that, right? I mean, that's, you know, the average may be four, but there are plenty of people who listen to 10 or more hours of audio every single day. And when you think about it, you know, you and I are both marketers. You really only have three ways to market to people. You have video, text, and audio. And marketers spend an awful lot of time on video. Video gets a lot of attention. And we spent a lot of time on text with blog posts and white papers for years and years and years. But audio is just this sleeping giant, this thing that can be consumed while you're doing something else, this thing that's really a companion medium, this thing that can be an intimate medium that, you know, can either be leaned forward or lean back. It can accompany you while you're doing other activities. You can listen to it while you're shopping online. You can listen to it, you know, while you're driving to work or while you're doing something else. There's all kinds of contextual things you could do with audio. And it's just really kind of largely been ignored. And I will say this, it's been ignored in some ways because I think it is the most difficult of the three major ways you can reach somebody to do well. I think good audio is much more difficult than good video. I think good, you know, video can be very forgiving, and I'm not just talking about quality. I'm really talking about the content. To really kind of create compelling audio, compelling theater of the mind that engages, is propulsive, is actually a pretty difficult skill. And so that's again one of the reasons I think for the slower growth of podcasting compared to something like YouTube, because there's, you know, the skills required to produce great audio are just not that common.
I think a lot of brands and marketers maybe default to thinking about how they can sponsor or, you know, put an ad in audio, because obviously we can do that in Spotify and Pandora and also along with podcasts, with, you know, other folks' podcasts. What are some interesting ways besides that brands or marketers could get involved in audio?
Well, I mean, the one thing that, so I have a lot of clients in the podcast network space. You know, most of the top 10 podcast networks work with us in one way or another. And when they tell you that your best bet is to have a host-read ad and the host has some latitude not just sticking to a script. When they tell you that that provides better results, please listen to them. And it's not that running a pre-recorded, you know, Geico spot doesn't work. It does work. It just doesn't work as well. And when you have that magical kind of confluence of the right host, the right subject matter of the podcast, the right engagement level of the host with the product itself, then you really got something magical here. And I'll give you, this may sound a little strange, Adam, but my favorite matchup of all of those things actually comes from radio. And it came from,
how dare you? No, I'm just kidding.
I know. Yeah. It came from Don Imus, and I will never forget Don Imus, for those who don't know, was sort of a legendary shock jock, you know, competitor to Howard Stern and New York Radio syndicated. He's deceased now, and his career kind of ended in a bit of controversy for some racially insensitive things that he said. But he was the king of the live read, and he was a noted recovering alcoholic, years and years and years. And so he used to run live reads for Buckler non-alcoholic beer. And he would always say something funny at the end of it. Like my favorite one was, "Buckler, you'll pee just as much, except not in a phone booth." And like that's not brand safe maybe, but you sure as hell remembered it. And I think podcasting gives you a lot of those opportunities. That's one. And then the other thing that I think marketers should really look into is branded content. And there's a lot of great branded content out there that is not sort of bashing you over the head with product ads, but is simply making great content available to you thanks to a sponsor.
Could I share one of my favorite examples that just happened recently?
Sure.
So Tazo Tea did a joint venture with RZA, who is like the producer and the main guy of the Wu-Tang Clan. And what they did was a set of, I think it was three or four guided meditations. And the meditations were very, you know, when you think of like, okay, hip hop guided meditations, like how does this all work? And Tazo was not really mentioned very much throughout it. I mean, it was you barely realized that Tazo was behind it. But the meditations were great. They were perfect for, like, they found a way to do it in the RZA style with the RZA music and everything. And it was something that I listened to and really enjoyed. In fact, shared with a number of other folks that were into hip hop, and they're like, "Yeah, I never really thought about guided meditation, but this stuff is interesting." And so, a number of folks who are out there, like at work now, and they're just got it playing in the background in their ears, just to kind of, you know, instead of listening to music, get a little positive vibes going. But I thought that was really cool that Tazo had done that with RZA.
Yeah, I love to hear stories like that. I love to hear really creative things that brands do beyond just buy our crap, you know. Another example, and we actually did research on this one for them. One of our podcast clients is Slate. You know, Slate has a whole raft of podcasts out there, and they did some work with Doctors Without Borders, or for our francophones in the audience, Médecins Sans Frontières. And basically at the end of the podcast that they were quote unquote advertising in was a little sort of 3-minute featurette. It was almost like a mini documentary of the life or the situation of one of these doctors out in the field. And it was super, it was in the style of the show. It was super compelling. It didn't hit you over the head with, you know, please donate. But you knew what you should do when you got to the end of that. And I just thought that was really, really creative. And you have such an opportunity, I think, to show the personality of your brand to engage on a much deeper level. You know, I've never thought of podcasting as a reach medium, but it's a wonderful engagement medium to really develop a deeper relationship with your customers.
Yeah, I think brands, businesses in general, they miss the opportunity of including podcasting as part of their content strategy. And with a little forethought and planning, there's probably an awful lot of their content from, you know, when they're producing videos, for instance, or even other content that they have that you know, at some level, and I'm thinking about, obviously, like you, what you said earlier about audio content is hard to do really, really, really well. But there's some level of forgiveness and things can improve over time. But I think there's an opportunity for brands and businesses to look at some of the content that they have. Again, maybe even some of the video that they have where they do an awful lot of talking head videos and actually the videos don't add a heck of a lot of value other than maybe seeing your face and seeing a little logo off to the side. But that along with some other content may be a good mix to create even a limited series of audio that you could put out there as part of your content strategy.
You know, I will say this though, Adam, I often try to talk brands out of doing it.
Really?
And yeah. And you would think I would be this incredible advocate for it, but more often than not, I try and talk brands out of doing it because you know, a brand will approach me and say, you know, we want to do a podcast. We think our product manager is great. We want to have him talk about, and as soon as they say, we want to have him talk about, like a part of my brain just shuts off because, you know, because podcasts are so easy to listen to on Spotify, right? If you're a tire company, your competition is not another tire company podcast. It's Joe Rogan. It's the new Tool album, right? It's there's all kinds of things I could listen to. And so I think if you're really going to do a compelling podcast, you have to commit to producing something that is either entertaining or challenging or comes from genuine expertise. Because just having your product manager go on there and talk about your software as a service offerings and all the new innovations in procurement, you know, would you listen to that? That's honestly one of the first questions I ask people when they give me these ideas. I say, would you listen to that really? If I change the name to your competitor, is this a show you would listen to? No. So I think you have to commit to the medium. You have to respect the medium. You have to understand that at some level, there's got to be some redeeming value to this show beyond what you want it to say.
I love that. Even the initial point is really important to remember. The competition isn't just some other tire company. It is whoever else is, whatever other options there are to grab a person's attention and to keep them engaged. And I would probably say that a lot of folks, a lot of businesses also fall victim to very similarly doing that in other mediums as well, not just audio. So, but I think that's a good reminder, what you said, because of the dynamic of how you follow and consume audio specifically. So I want to move towards the finish line here in the conversation with a little bit about the future of audio. So Twitter recently rolled out the opportunity to add audio, just basically create posts that are audio tweets. They're just rolling it out right now. Years ago, Facebook had the option to do live audio streams versus live video streams. So everybody sort of dabbled, the social networks have dabbled in trying to make audio a piece of content, that format of content to get out there to folks. I thought what was interesting on a technology perspective was that Apple AirPods, which are by and large the most popular in-ear, you know, headphones, are about to have a software update that allows them to have, I think the pros specifically in this case, do something called spatial audio. And the spatial audio allows it to process the movement of your head in real time while listening to, you know, while changing the dynamics of the audio you're hearing. So, you know, this is going to be most useful when it comes to something like an AR or VR experience. But I would imagine that you could use it in any way to create sort of a more dynamic listening experience because programmers are going to make it available to, you know, in an API to manipulate that data. And then lastly, with that, supposedly you also have an opportunity on customizing the way that your sound is a little bit better for your particular experience, the type of hearing that you, the type of sound you need to hear, because we're all humans, right? We have different ears and different they're unique, are the way that our ears pick up sound sometimes. Those are just some examples of how I see that, you know, some of the networks have tried to dabble in making audio more prevalent as a format, and also a way that that technology that's become very pervasive right now with all of the folks that have bought the headphones over the last few years, and how that's also impacted headphone, similar smart headphone sort of product creation from Samsung and even Google and other folks. Do you have any thoughts on those things and how we might see the experience of audio change in the future, or what we might need from technology in order to enhance that experience?
I think all we need is more creativity and innovation, honestly. And it's, you know, technology, yes. But you know, for years and years and years, podcasts were of a very similar format. And, you know, now, you know, with smart speakers, we're getting shorter briefings, you know, shorter snippets of things. The streaming services like Spotify and Pandora are sort of daisy chaining together shorter updates. So you're listening to a variety of different kinds of content. There's still plenty of untapped potential for audio fiction, which I think is really just getting started. So there's those kinds of innovations, but even just sort of creativity in terms of considering audio as an overall part of an experience, you know, as not necessarily the sole experience, but as a part of it. And I guess I'll wrap this up with what I think is the greatest activation / advertising thing I've ever heard of in my life. And that was a campaign that was in, it was in Seoul, South Korea, and Dunkin' Donuts did the following. They equipped buses with a device that emitted the aroma of coffee whenever their spot played on the bus radio. So there was an inaudible tag in the radio commercial, and when their commercial played in the bus would smell like coffee, and all of the bus stops were wrapped in full Dunkin' Donuts branding. Now,
wow.
You find me a better brand activation than that, then I'll give you a dollar, because that's just sinister and incredible. And audio is a part of it.
That's mind blowing, actually. They couldn't have done it on a lot of those. I mean, to see that sort of scale would be incredible. But it's interesting because now you can do those things in a very limited, you know, amount of locations, for instance, and because of social media, it can spread like wildfire as it stands out to people and becomes something worth sharing. Tom, where can folks find more of you?
Well, you can find all of our publicly available research is at edisonresearch.com, and probably the easiest way to find me on social is on Twitter. I'm Webby2001 on Twitter.
Webby2001. Well, I super appreciate you spending the time. I want to dig into some of these things a little bit differently in the future with you, if you'd like to, if you wouldn't mind coming back with me. I'm going to release you back into the wild, the elusive Tom Webster. I'm going to release you back into the wild and hope that I can catch you again when the time comes around to talk to you in the future.
Yeah, I'm not like on Deadliest Catch. I'm just not a keeper, Adam.
I wasn't even going to follow through with any jokes beyond that. I appreciate your time, man.
You got it.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye.
Woohoo! You made it to the end of the podcast. Awesome. Well, thank you for spending time with me and the Marketing in the Raw podcast. Again, my name is Adam Helway, and I am just going to continue to work hard at getting more and more of these shows out to you. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe. And if you've already subscribed, you are incredible, and I love you. And if you haven't, you should be ashamed of yourself. No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to guilt you into subscribing, but it would be awesome if you would. And if you've already subscribed, then please leave us a review and a rating wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. That helps so many other people find us. And then last but not least, if you'd like to talk about marketing, if you need help with anything you got going on, or just simply want to connect, you can go ahead and email me at adam@secretsushi.com, or you could just go to secretsushi.com and check out what we're doing. Okay? Take care.